This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Jim Mulhern, President and CEO of the National Milk Producers Federation. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Jim Mulhern next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net, providing individualized protection on more than 490 million acres of farmland. Crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. There is agreement among many in the dairy industry that the National Milk Marketing Order should be revised to reflect changes since the last revision 23 years ago. There is disagreement in the process and the data that should be used to consider those changes. Jim Mulhern, President and CEO of the National Milk Producers Federation, believes there should be a comprehensive review, including but not limited to the make allowance factor.
Well, USDA does a very good job of providing important data for the industry on at many levels. A lot of these pricing factors that go into the pricing formula that we're using to determine those four class prices are based upon data that is reported to USDA. There's a National Dairy Product Sales Report, which is a weekly report of sales and prices, wholesale prices per product, a national mandatory dairy product reporting system that does provide good price information, and that information undergirds the prices that are reported by USDA for the four classes of milk. So there is pretty good data out there on many levels. Where there is a dearth of data, a lack of good data, is on this issue of the manufacturing cost of product, the manufacturing allowance or make allowance, it's called in industry jargon. And that is an area where the data is not as good. USDA tried to collect data to get an update on what is the make allowance, what's the cost of making cheese, butter, whey, and non-fat dry milk in a processing plant, because you have to know that to determine the appropriate class price for class 3 and 4 in particular. And USDA conducted a voluntary survey to collect some of that information. It took about 4 years to get that survey completed. When it was completed, some of the data was already old because it dates back to 2018. And then when it was issued by USDA, there were clearly some problems in the data. So that's been a challenge for us, trying to address make allowances. They need to be updated, just like other pricing factors in the formula. They need to be updated, but you need solid information, and we've had to utilize the best information we have to try to adjust that. It is a problem that haven't been increased in 15 years, and that is a challenge here that we've got to deal with in this program. It's one of the reasons we're taking a comprehensive approach to update all of these factors that need to be addressed.
So how much work or how many meetings have you held searching for consensus and trying to maintain balance in this program?
This has been an extensive activity for National Milk over the last a year and a half. We've held over 150 meetings of our dairy farmer members and our co-op technical experts, the people who are, you know, working with the Federal Order Program on a daily basis. We've done extensive outreach to the national organizations, you know, including the American Farm Bureau Federation, a number of state and regional dairy associations, and then our own board of directors and our own co-op membership. So it's been a lot of work that's gone into this effort over the last year to look at the program in great detail and come up with a plan to modernize, update this program so it works for today's dairy industry. And that's been the result of the comprehensive plan that we've put together, been approved by our board of directors last month, and will be going to USDA as a petition requesting a national federal order hearing later this month.
Again, the secretary called for consensus. So what did the international dairy producers and the Wisconsin cheese makers, what did they propose, and how is that a contrast to the proposal that will come from your board?
Well, the two groups you just mentioned, International Dairy Foods Association and the Wisconsin Cheesemakers Association, have put forth a petition that would only address that make allowance issue, that manufacturing cost, the cost of making product, which goes into the pricing formula, and that is a deduct from the pricing formula. So I mentioned that data that USDA collects on the weekly report of wholesale prices. Once you have that figure, you have to, and it's on a per pound basis of product, you've got to subtract the cost of making that product in the formula. You go through a number of steps, but you get to a value of milk, a hundredweight value of milk, which reflects kind of the farm value, if you will, for the various classes. So the make allowance is important to get to that Class 3 or Class 4 price in particular, and those factors haven't been updated in 15 years. They do need to be updated and addressed. The USDA study that I mentioned that was done did not provide the information that we really needed. The IDFA and Wisconsin cheesemakers, who represent in this case really the proprietary processors in the industry, put forth a petition to address that single issue. That's a problem. That's a mistake in our view. Just addressing that one single issue in isolation would have the effect of reducing milk prices to farmers, and it is not the only issue in need of review and updating. It's not the only issue that USDA needs to address. We have the make allowance issue in our proposal. It's one of seven provisions of our overall program, but we also have other updates in our policy proposal that will provide an offset to that make allowance adjustment. So if you look at when you adjust make allowances, that has the effect of reducing pay prices to producers. There are other factors in the formula that need to be addressed that could offset those reductions, and that's really the comprehensive look that we've taken. So I wrote after IDFA and WCMA put their proposal forward to USDA. I did indicate to USDA that National Milk was opposed to that. The American Farm Bureau Federation has also indicated its opposition to that single-issue proposal, and a number of our dairy co-ops around the country and other farm groups around the country are weighing in as well to let the department know that any effort to update the federal order program has to take a comprehensive approach to modernize this, not address a single issue.
This task sounds a lot like herding cats in that there are so many elements to consider and so many things that have changed over the past several years. The labor factor, the fuel factor, the consumer and consumer demand for the various products that come from milk, not to mention from the producer aspect and the cost that producers are incurring. This is a monumental task, and consensus sounds like it's almost been elusive there.
Well, it has been a big task, and it has been your analogy of herding cats has come up more than one time over the course of the last year, but it's been a very successful effort. We have been able to align the producer community. Part of the reason we did the extensive outreach that I talked about was to make sure that we addressed the concern that Secretary Vilsack had stated well over a year ago when he said it was important to have a consensus within the producer community. We have achieved that consensus. That was part of our effort to do all the outreach I mentioned to various producer organizations, state, regional, and national organizations, along with our co-op membership, to really capture the sentiment and the views of dairy farmers across the country. And I've been very heartened by the strong degree of support for the proposal that we will be submitting to USDA this month. You never find 100% unanimity in any effort. That's not the goal. But the goal is to have a strong consensus. We've achieved that. Not across the entire dairy industry, but I never expected that in the first place. I knew our focus has been to get the producer community aligned, and because that is the focus of this federal milk marketing order program, and we've achieved that. So I feel very confident moving forward that we have a proposal that will get a very strong support, and I'm looking for a positive outcome at the end of this process that we're really just at the front end of, because we haven't submitted the proposal yet. But I am looking forward to the degree of discussion and consensus that's already been achieved. I'm pleased with that. I'm looking forward to what's to come.
It's a shame, as hard as you've worked, to ask for a summary, but generally, if you could outline, what are the things that producers agree need amending?
Well, I'll try to give you a couple of highlights, Jeff. There are some detailed provisions in the pricing formulas that need to be addressed. And really, all we're doing there is bringing them up to date. You know, one example is the composition of milk. One of the factors, the coefficients in this pricing formula, is tied to the solids, the protein, the solids, not fat, and the other solids content of milk. And in that formula, you use the national average levels of those in 100 weight of milk. Those factors date back to the late 90s. Again, 2000 was the last time that there was major change in the federal order program. And so the milk composition values that are in the pricing formulas reflect the average protein content, the average solids, not fat content, and other solids content in the U.S. milk supply back in the late 90s. 25 years on now, the protein content, the solids, not fat, and the other solids content of milk coming off the farm is higher than it was 25 years ago. So we need to adjust those factors because they have an impact on the price that is reported and then ultimately paid to producers. So that's one kind of detailed issue. The two bigger picture items are one we've talked about, the make allowance. That needs to be addressed. It'll be in our proposal to increase those make allowances in a two-step process. One, through the hearing, put a increase in each of the four products that are part of that pricing formula, cheese, whey, butter, and non-fat dry milk, increase the make allowance of those four products. But at the same time, we need to address this issue of solid data so we can make these changes. And for that, we need to go to Congress to get authority for USDA to conduct a mandatory manufacturing cost survey. And we're going to pursue that in the Farm Bill, get a provision from the Congress that gives USDA the authority to do a mandatory survey of plants that are reporting their price information to USDA and get further information from them on what is the cost of manufacturing their product. Report that every 2 years to the industry, and then we can update these make allowances on a more regular basis going forward. That'll be important because it's part of modernizing this program. The other major issue I would point to has to do with this Class 1 fluid milk price, which I mentioned earlier. Class 1 is the fluid milk that goes into the bottle, into the carton, the beverage milk sold across the country. Class 1 milk is priced off of the price of milk for manufacturing, Class 3 and 4. And up until the 2018 Farm Bill, you took the higher of either Class 3 or 4, and that became the base price for Class 1 milk, and you added a differential, a fixed price per 100 weight of milk in each of the 11 federal orders around the country. So you had different Class 1 prices in each order designed to reflect the cost of serving the fluid market. It's a higher cost market to service. the higher up is what worked for the industry for 18 years, since 2000. Changed it in the 2018 Farm Bill to become, instead of the higher of, the average of. Average of class 3 and 4. And this gets very detailed, but the people in the dairy industry know this well. When that change was made, it was designed to be revenue neutral for dairy farmers, and it worked well initially. When the pandemic hit and we had all kinds of wild price gyrations in milk pricing, the food box program purchased a lot of cheese, which is class 3. It didn't purchase much of any butter, which is class 4. So you had those two markets, class 3 and 4, widely diverge. Class 3 increased because of the food box program. Class 4, when the pandemic hit, stayed at a very, very low level. When you average those, that cost dairy farmers a lot of money, to the tune of almost $1 billion up to today in lost revenue as a result of the change in the mover. So part of our proposal is to go back to the higher of and use what had worked for dairy farmers for the period from 2000 to 2018. We want to go back to that that mover on class 1 fluid milk because it's the only way you can assure that producers won't be harmed when you have those kind of wild price gyrations that occur. And we are seeing more divergence between class 3 and class 4 these days. So going back to that higher of on the class 1 mover is important, and we'll be pursuing that. I know that is very technical, arcane stuff I just talked about, but it's part of the complex pricing of milk for the various classes we have in this country, and it is an important, really fundamental to this pricing structure.
Well, there's certainly a lot of detail in the things that you have been working on for a very long time, more than a year. And it sounds like it's going to take more time to bring this to a conclusion, but hopefully a worthy effort. Speaking of things that have taken a long time, maybe the topic should be what's in a label. For an extended period of time, dairy producers have been asking for guidance from the FDA on what appears on the front of the label of beverages, and specifically plant-based beverages. Do you feel like you're finally making some traction with the FDA and what's in the dairy case?
Well, I would say we've made some progress, not enough progress. As you said, Jeff, in your comments, this issue has been a thorn in our side for many, many years, and it's created to a great deal of consumer confusion in the marketplace on the nutritional equivalence, the nutritional value of these fake dairy products. We have been pushing FDA to act for a number of years. This is not a recent effort, but I will say the last 5 years, really, I've made this a major priority and continued to push FDA to enforce the existing standards of identity on milk and dairy products. And what those standards say is, in order to use dairy terms, you have to have a certain profile of the product. And none of the imitators that are in the marketplace, the nut juices, the various beverages that have a plant-based substrate added to water and vitamins and stabilizers and emulsifiers and coloring, et cetera, none of those products has the same nutritional content as does the dairy product that they're imitating. And what the standards of identity say is, if you purport to be a product that it has an existing standard, if you don't meet the standard, these products should be called, if they're going to use a dairy term, their imitation, their substitute, or their alternative. That's the existing standards of identity, which we've been trying to get FDA to enforce for many years. The department has finally, FDA has finally come out with guidance in this area. And they have, in their draft guidance, acknowledged and recognized our main argument that these products are not nutritionally equivalent in the case of milk. They're not nutritionally equivalent to the product that they're purporting to be. And that's important because it has nutritional consequences for consumers. It is misleading when they don't have the same nutrition that milk does, especially when consumer survey after consumer survey has shown that consumers think when they're buying something that is called milk, in even a plant-based milk, they don't think that that product is cow's milk, but they do think that it is equal to or better in nutrition than cow's milk, and that's not true. That's the false and misleading activity that's going on here. So the guidance that that FDA has issued would provide disclosure on the front of the label for the nutrients for which that product differs from what is in milk. Of course, a glass of milk is standardized. Every glass of milk has the same amount of calcium, protein, magnesium, phosphorus, potassium, etc. The only difference in milk really is the fat content, whether it is whole milk, 2%, 1%, or skim. All the other nutrients are the same in every glass. That's not the case when it comes to these imitations. They're all over the map. It's the Wild West out there in terms of the nutritional content. So the labeling guidance approved by or advanced by FDA would provide that companies that are marketing these products, if they're going to use the milk term and they don't have the same nutrition as cow's milk on 9 different nutrients for which milk is the is a major source in the diet, if they don't meet that, they have to show on the label how they differ. That is better than the case today where there's the complete Wild West. People market products using the term milk when they are all over the map in terms of the nutritional content, but it's still not enough. And that's why we're continuing to advance efforts in the Congress to get the Dairy Pride Act passed. We'll be pushing very hard this year to get this Congress to get this bill approved. It's been reintroduced in both the Senate and the House, and we're very grateful for our sponsors. Senator Baldwin has made this a major issue, along with her co-sponsors in the Senate, Jim Risch from Idaho, Peter Welsh from Vermont, and Susan Collins from Maine, are the 4 key lead sponsors in the Senate. And we've got the bill introduced in the House as well, and very pleased with the broad support we have in the House bill. Our effort's going to be to push the Dairy Pride Act, to get that enacted so that FDA has to go beyond this draft guidance that they've issued and actually enforce the existing standards of identity on these products. If they purport to be a dairy product, they have to indicate their differences with the term imitation, substitute, or alternative, depending on the nutritional content of the product, or they can simply market themselves on their own merits and not use dairy terms. So a long answer to an important issue, Jeff. The FDA guidance in this area is a small step. It's not enough. We still want to see Congress act on the Dairy Pride Act.
Jim Mulhern, we want to thank you for your career of service to the dairy industry and certainly to agriculture. Thanks for taking time in such a midst of a busy schedule to spend with us here on this edition of Open Mic. Jim, it is Open Mic, and today you've got the last word, sir.
Well, Jeff, I just want to really salute you guys. AgriPulse does such a great job of covering agriculture, informing all of us throughout the ag community, but also policymakers. And, really it's the service that all of you provide that enable us to address some of these many challenges, some of which we've talked about here today. But it does take all of us to do this, and I appreciate the opportunity to be with you today. Appreciate the work that you do and all of your colleagues at AgriPulse. So hats off to you.
Our thanks to Jim Mulhern, President and CEO of the National Milk Producers Federation, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nally.